Right, I'd like to start this second half looking at Pawaga, which was the biggest scheme that we ever tried to do, and we managed, I have to say. Pawaga is a very difficult place. It's right in the northwestern corner of Iringa District in Tanzania. The climate's pretty poor, with very high temperatures, very low rainfall. They've got lots of malaria and lots of riverborne water diseases. So it's not a terribly hospitable place. Many of the people living there have been displaced from other parts of Tanzania because of poverty, and they belong to different tribal groups, so there's little social cohesion either. That it is just a kind of a mishmash of people. But the Anglican Church in Iringa saw the need and invited CED to get involved. And one of the many things about to be successful in development, you need to go where there is a perceived need. Because if people aren't ready to do anything, then you are really struggling to try and foist stuff on them. But the church, the Christian Church, is an institution that gets to areas that are often ignored by other organisations. And I think it is one of the strengths of the church worldwide that there are Christians right down to grassroots and among the poorest people. And Jesus had time for the poorest and the most marginalised. I show the map just to show that the pipeline is long enough to show on a map, which is, it's quite a big scale project. We were very fortunate at that time to have Christine Kalipamwambu as the diocesan development officer for the church, for Iringa. And she was tireless in her efforts to make sure the local villages were really behind the project, and that they would provide all the unskilled labour and join in and so buy in to what was happening so that they would feel it was their project. And while CED was providing all the technical engineering expertise, Christine was able to work at the health education side and generally just make sure things happened. She met a bit of resistance from the local mosque, but was able to reassure them that we are working for the benefit of everyone, and generally won people over. The project involved taking an outflow from the Little Ruaha River, it being recognised that shallow wells, they just wouldn't last all year, they would dry up, and the possibility of deep bore wells, these require a lot of maintenance and they get very expensive to try and pump. So that's Christine standing in the middle of the dam, and the next picture shows the dam and a guy standing on the pipe, which is encased in concrete, which flows all the way through the scheme. The water gets cleaned in settlement chambers, then a slow sand filter. Then it's taken in a 10-inch diameter pipe for 23 kilometres to serve a selection of storage tanks and water towers. CED employed Rob Wakeling, who is now our membership secretary, to be project engineer. Rob visited in 3-week stints every second month to work with Christine, helping her managing materials and organising people to carry out the work. On his return here, he spent quite a lot of time with John Holloway discussing all the issues that needed discussed. So phase one of the project covered only 8 of the 14 villages that need water, but the pipeline is big enough so that if in time we manage to find a way of raising funds, then we'll be able to supply the other 6 villages. The scheme currently supplies 16,000 people. CED prides itself in providing value for money, and the project didn't have a huge contingency when the financial crash happened. We were caught out by exchange rates, there are steep rises in the prices of materials, and in the end, the €990,000 project cost €1.2 million. But we did manage to deliver a solid piece of engineering that represented extremely good value for our funding partners, who included the European Union, Tier Fund and others, not least CED supporters. And it's testimony to John's cool head and careful stewardship by our treasurer that the project didn't put a small organisation like us out of business. John recorded in our May 2012 newsletter, CED's efforts would have been in vain had the project not been undergirded by prayer. We are so thankful to God for his guiding hand. The project was formally handed over to the local community by Dr. Kikwete, president of Tanzania, in March 2012. And you can find out more about the project this afternoon if you come for your scones and tea. It brought a lot of benefit to society. The Stradlings went out at the end of the project and were able to report that the women and girls were no longer having to walk several kilometres each day to collect water. And there are stories of crocodiles getting the odd person before the project as well, that it made a huge difference to people's lives. And it freed up women to spend their time caring for their children and tending crops and so on, instead of always walking to and fro with jerry cans of water. School attendance normally increases as children are no longer having to be used as water carriers for the family. And incidences of serious diarrhea no longer dominate the work of the local dispensaries. And both children and adults are much healthier because of this project. And the church is seen in action, paving the way for telling people about Jesus' love. Just to prove that we are global and not totally focused in Africa, we've had contacts in Pakistan for a while, and we're really pleased when in 2010 we received funding from the Scottish Government for a project that we put together with PVDP to promote rainwater harvesting in the Thar Desert. It's a very challenging context. They only get around 300 millimetres rain on average a year, and often go for 2 or 3 years just with a very slight shower. But the alternative is digging wells, and when they dig wells, they go down a long way and they get very brackish water, often with a lot of arsenic and kind of nasty chemicals in it. So this was our solution. It's a water collection cistern. The rain gets collected on that cement apron and then finds its way into little holes in the sides of these pyramids with the hatches on them for drawing the water from. And people are generally very happy with them. We have jumped. My God, sorry. This is... just to show you, this is trying to explain what Pakistan is. In the Thar Desert and in that area of Sindh, near the Indian border, people are very backward just by general Pakistani standards, because Pakistan is a nuclear power, and it's a nuclear power who has citizens still living in mud huts, which is a bit strange, and cooking with firewood. The core of the project was helping each village to organise itself so that they were in a better position to ask the local politicians for schools and other things that they have a right to. We helped them form water committees in each village, emphasising the importance of giving proper roles to women. And they really rose to that challenge as well. It was very often women who were heading up these committees. So over 6 years, we worked in 60 different villages. And we dug 1,700 water cisterns throughout. We dug 7 wells. We would have dug more, but there was a government moratorium after another NGO had, unfortunately, a well collapse and somebody was killed. They were just being a bit careful after that. But we managed to repair 62 existing wells that just weren't working for one reason or another. We built 14 reservoirs. And we encouraged people to plant vegetables. So 1,700 people planted vegetables, and they planted 30,000 trees. Their PVDP is very keen in tree planting, just partly as a climate change issue. And as well as that, we delivered 60 donkeys to help deliver the water when there was a drought. And we even managed to build a sand dam with a bit extra help from Tear Fund for that one. So we spent £400,000 over 6 years, but then the Scottish Government's priorities changed. So last year we applied to DFID but were unsuccessful, although we were encouraged to apply again, and we're now waiting to hear how we got on with the application that went in last month. The new project will focus more on sanitation, and the idea is it will help people to see the importance of using latrines, so that whole villages will use the latrines, not just a few families, and that way the flies can't cause havoc. Because the problem is if only a few people use latrines, then the flies just go to the next place and carry the disease everywhere. As well as being successful in terms of water security, the project had a wider influence as well. The local schools in Tar Parker are very poorly supported, and around 800 of them are closed at any one time. So our partners, PVDP's workshops and advocacy and lobbying, led to four of the project villages approaching the government and demanding schools, which they got. And this is a quote from Ms. Sammy, who lives in Sacrio. "Before 3 years ago, we were not aware of the value of education, and we had difficulties to fetch water from a distant deep dug well. Me and my daughter, Dapu, used to spend 3 to 4 hours per day collecting water, and my daughter was unable to get education as she had no time to get to school, and besides, there was no school in the village. But after the advocacy and lobbying training and obtaining the benefits of water through the water tanks, a repaired well and pond, now we have enough time and the government has opened a school in our village. Now my daughter is able to get education and now she's going to school daily. We are really happy that our children are getting educated." And now just for contrast, back to Africa, to the seaside at Zanzibar. It is called Paradise Island, and there's good reason for that, but there are also tensions in the island. And things aren't helped by the fact that the main political party in Tanzania doctored the election results to keep a pro-Muslim party out of power a couple of years ago. Over the past few years, several churches have been burned, and converts from Islam live in fear. But the Anglican Cathedral stands proud and is the main tourist attraction on the island. The cathedral, as a historic building, sees itself very much as a demonstration of the right of the Christian community to be part of the Zanzibar scene and have its place there. Back in 2007, the cathedral needed some conservation work, and CED got involved and was asked to look at it. Of course, we sent an engineer, and the first thing the engineer noticed was there was a huge crack in the west gable. So another engineer visited and drew up some remedial proposals. There was some talk of imminent collapse, but not enough panic ensued for anybody to actually give us any money, and it wasn't until the World Monuments Fund became involved that funds were found and a project swung into action. It was a very unusual project for CED, though with its conservation bias, it very much suited me as an architect. This is the before picture of the cathedral. Old Bishop Steer built it at the end of the 19th century on the site of the Zanzibar slave market. He was very keen to make it a place where others would feel welcome, and the result is a wonderful mix of the European, Omani, and African influences. Crenellations like those around the parapet can be found all over Stone Town, dating from the time the Omanis arrived. The polylobe mirror arches of the blind arcades and the clerestory vents of the exterior are to be found in local mosques, but it's still very obviously a church. Inside, too, the simple power of the local Islamic tradition is recognised along with more Western references. And Bishop Steer, recognising that in mosques men and women worship separately, he built a women's gallery at the back above the narthex. The great concrete vault roof, however, was built with more enthusiasm than understanding, because reinforcement concrete design really only became a method in the early 20th century. And the bishop had to rely very much on the concrete mass to hold things together. And unfortunately, he overdid the concrete in the middle of the roof, and the sheer weight eventually started to push the walls apart, much like we have here. But your nice stone building is standing better than the cathedral did, which is one of the tallest choral buildings in the world. And our solution was to tie the walls together again. That we brought a contractor from Dar es Salaam, and Angus Armstrong, our engineer, spent a month on site supporting him and making sure it all got done properly. We installed stainless steel ties across, similar to what you see all over the place these days. And being fairly low-key and stainless, they won't rust. At the same time as we did this, we made the building watertight by replacing the roof tiles and generally cleaned the place up. We were really fortunate to have a conservation mason to lead the team of local tradesmen. Tony Steele trained in London and was out of a job, having had to leave a conservation project in Syria in a great hurry. He was really disgusted. They wouldn't let him go back and pick up his tools. But, I mean, it is just part of the tragedy of Syria. The World Monuments Fund project included an exhibition about slavery and set up a much better visitor experience for tourists. The cathedral has a very good income stream from the project, and the hope is that they'll use some of this to develop their historic church sites elsewhere in the island. But they have many needs, so I'm not sure how high conservation is among these. But in any case, if you can book your holiday soon while the paint's fresh, the cathedral interior is amazing, and there's just a huge amount of history attached to the project. To round things up, I'd like to take you to Uganda and some of our other rural Africa projects. We've been in Uganda a long time and employ Philip Tabendarama a couple of days a month there. We work closely with the Anglican Church, who are very good at finding the communities that need help, and they are able to lead on this kind of softer side of development, ensuring that people know what they're doing and get health education and so on. One of our most challenging recent projects has been Kisyakagana, where the springs were on one side of the valley and the trading post was in the other. So we took a 6-kilometre pipeline around the head of the valley and connected up storage tanks and more than 50 tap points along the way. We got really good support from the local people who are desperate to get water, and they did all. This is them opening the eye of one of the springs. Excuse me. In Rwanda, we're in contact with a group of returning refugees who are in need of water, and we hope to help them to build rainwater harvesting tanks. In Tanzania, we're currently working with the local authority in Chato District on the shores of Lake Victoria. This is a new experiment for us. We're working with a government department who have their organisation, but they don't have a lot of experience, and they're very keen to have support from outsiders. So we'll be supporting the department rather than actually doing anything, although we're sending some spares to them just now to try and get started and get the relationship going. And small initiatives like this we can do from CED resources. With our low overheads, we can do experiments like this. And it really does bring quite a difference to a local area when we have this flexibility. because Tanzania has always had good government representation right down to South household level. And as the economy gathers strength, you hope that the government will be able to provide more of the services that we in the West take so much for granted. This is another small project, is a pump house for a well at a Bible college in Tanzania. I was responsible for this one, and it cost rather more than it should have, because when you drill a borehole, you don't know whether you're going to hit water until you hit it, and we did have to have two tries in Majahida. We're also working in Zanzibar to help one of the local Anglican communities to get electricity so they can pump more easily, and another community just to get the water from where the well is, a couple of miles away, to the village centre. So I hope that you feel that your support for CED is effective. Last year we spent just over £4,000 in governance and marketing. The rest of the £61,000 expenditure was in engineering activity. There are some leaflets and our annual review over at the side if anyone would like to take one. And we have the website, and there are cream teas this afternoon for anybody who would like. And I'm more than happy to talk endlessly about CED to any of you who have any questions. Thank you very much. Thank you, Andy.